You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The top two candidates in the Republican presidential primary have recently drawn some criticism for views they expressed about the U.S. Civil War. It started with former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who didn't mention slavery when asked in New Hampshire about the causes of the Civil War.
I mean, I think the cause of the Civil War was basically how government was going to run, the freedoms and what people could and couldn't do.
The next day at a New Hampshire town hall event, Haley clarified her comment to include slavery in her explanation.
Of course the Civil War was about slavery. We know that. That's unquestioned, always the case. We know the Civil War was about slavery. But it was also more than that. It was about the freedoms of every individual. It was about the role of government.
Former President Donald Trump criticized Haley for not initially talking about slavery. He later added his own thoughts on the Civil War during a speech in Iowa.
I was thinking to myself, because I was reading something, and I said, this is something that could have been negotiated, you know? And it was just for all those people to die, and they died viciously. That was a vicious, vicious war. And in many ways, look, they're all this, nothing nice about it, but boy, that was a tough one for our country. But I think it's, Abraham Lincoln. Of course, if you negotiated it, you probably wouldn't even know who Abraham Lincoln was. He would have been president, but he would have been president. He wouldn't have been the Abraham Lincoln. Would have been different, but that would have been okay.
Civil War historians have pushed back on both Haley's and Trump's characterizations of the war. The controversy brings up broader questions about how we talk about the Civil War and why we still ask politicians about it more than 150 years later. Our next guest researches the history of cultural and intellectual thought in the U.S. She's with us to talk about how the idea of the Civil War has been used in different ways over the decades. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to those comments we heard from the leading Republican primary candidates? Do you think it's important for us to keep talking about the Civil War in 2024? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen is the Merle Curdy and Vilas Borghese Distinguished Achievement Professor of History at UW-Madison. She's the author of a lot of books, including The Ideas That Made America a Brief History. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me back.
So people might wonder why we're asking our politicians about the Civil War in 2024. Why is it important to hear our politicians' perspectives on this pivotal event in U.S. history?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind is that the answer that the politicians give are not historical answers, but they're political. Yeah, so they're not really about trying to give us a fuller view of the past. They're about making a political statement about now and also about where they see the country going in the future. But we ask the question, Rob, or it gets asked, I should say, because it is a Rorschach test for so many other crucial issues.
What kind of issues?
Well, the first one is obvious, race, racism, what they think about the legacy of slavery, whether they think that there's something like systematic racism with us still today. Another one that, interestingly, doesn't get talked about a lot, but I think it will, as I think this question about the Civil War is going to keep coming up, just even, regardless of whether Haley stays in the race or not. And that is because the question about the Civil War is a Rorschach test on what you think about states' rights. And right now, post-Roe, this is a very pressing question in a way that it hasn't been for decades. Although, of course, the whole dynamics of it are different. But again, there can be something very illuminating in how much you lean into a states' rights argument in the context of a post-Roe America. And then the last thing, Rob, is just it does give you some window of the candidate's broader historical sense, which again is less about what they think about history, but more an opportunity to see what they think about America today, especially what they think about American democracy today.
This isn't the first time politicians have disputed the causes of the Civil War, the run-up to the Civil War. Can you talk about the idea of the Civil War as an intellectual war of sorts in American politics in the decades since the war itself?
that you put it very nicely. It's an intellectual war or battle of ideas over, you know, a battle over the idea of the Civil War. Who has a proprietary stake? Who has a claim? I think what's important is that every time the Civil War is invoked in some sort of political discussion, it's invoked to do political work. Yeah. And so there are as many civil wars in American intellectual history since 1865 as there are people who have put it to use, right? For a campaign, for a piece of artwork, for a monument. So that's, it's part of the answer to that question, Rob, is really in what are the particular contexts in which there's even an, let's say, an uptick in interest in the Civil War, and how is it getting used?
I've seen the argument, Jennifer, that yes, the Union won the war itself, but by about 1920 or so, the Southern states, the former Confederate states, had won that battle of ideas in a lot of ways in shaping how we talked about the Civil War and what showed up in kids' textbooks and things like that. Can you talk about that turning point in the way we talked about the Civil War?
There's a famous quote that the North won the war and the South won the peace. And that's just one way of saying another version of what you're saying, which is that eventually the South was able to put forth a kind of master narrative that had a lot of traction. And that one of them that is, you know, the Lost Cause narrative. So sort of the romance about the Confederacy going down for a cause worth fighting for, which was their own sovereignty, their own self-determination. It wasn't explicit that, of course, it was really fundamentally about slavery. But there's another way in which we could say that the South, that is to say the pre-Civil War South, or the, you know, the pre-Reunion South, Union South, won the war. And that is that we never really fully worked through what to do about the systemic racism that undergirded slavery. It very quickly turned into something called the Black Codes. And then it very quickly, you know, after that turned into Jim Crow. And Jim Crow was with us well into the 20th century. So I think in that regard, if you will, the white supremacy that undergirded the Southern, the whole Southern economics and the whole Southern way of life, that stayed with us long past the last battles.
Talking to Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen, history professor at UW-Madison, talking about how we talk about the U.S. Civil War, its causes, its consequences, still in 2024 on the presidential campaign trail. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Dwayne is with us in Westfield. Dwayne, hi.
Hi, how you doing? For a lot of jobs in our country, we have to actually take a test for like driving and stuff like that. And we got politicians that go in and try to get our votes and do all this other stuff. Maybe we should start having them actually take a test prior to trying to take the job for civics or history in general. Because a lot of these people that are spouting off their mouth, they're not paying attention to what they're doing. And a lot of these people think that they actually passed high school and they've done something. So why do we as a country not take this job, taking the job as a president more seriously and learning about our history before they even think they can fix it?
Dwayne, thanks a lot for the call. Jennifer, I don't think we'd ever have a formal test you'd have to pass to become president. I think the Constitution allows that. But in a sense, that is a thing that voters can test their candidates on.
Yeah, that's a great question, Dwayne. I mean, I think one of the things that's funny you mentioned testing is that actually this is I don't recall a historic a presidential campaign where so much talk about cognitive testing was part of it. And of course, you know, that's because of Trump's taking the cognitive tests while he was in office and then quote unquote acing them, and then of course questions about Biden's mental fitness in his advanced age. And we've got two either octogenarians or almost octogenarians. So the question of their mental fitness is quite real. And that's one we don't really know how to address, though I know that the question is a little different. It's not just their cognitive capabilities. It's called like just their basic understanding of history. I think the reason why we don't have that is it would break into the kind of history wars that we see are going on right now. Who gets to write those tests? Who writes the questions? Yeah. Do we, in, on those tests, are we going to say that Rosa Parks was responding to racism, or are we going to cut it out like the textbooks are doing right now in Florida for middle schoolers? Yeah. I mean, so even the drafting of those tests would be so contentious because there is this fight over the memory of the Civil War.
Dwayne, thanks for the call. We're talking to UW-Madison history professor Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen about how we talk about the Civil War, the U.S. Civil War in 2024, and what it says about our society and our leaders, how we talk in 2024, not the Civil War in 2024. You get what I'm saying. Join in at 800-642-1234. Do you remember reading textbooks in school and how it characterized the Civil War before and after? Does your understanding change over time? Do we talk about it differently now, even than when you went to school? What do you want to hear from presidents when asked about the causes of the Civil War, the importance of it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen, professor of U.S. intellectual and cultural history at UW-Madison. She's with us today to talk about how we talk about the idea of the U.S. Civil War, with Donald Trump and Nikki Haley recently making some controversial comments about its history on the campaign trail. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now with Kay in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is my topic. I'm a Civil War historian. I concentrate on politics, which I've also been involved in, and finding the critical facts. If you don't find the critical facts, you're not going to talk about it right. And a lot of the history has been written by neo-Confederate men who avoid or somehow just don't discuss the critical facts. Here's the three big critical facts. Slavery was started in Virginia among aristocrats. So it's not about the critical race theory. It's about the critical class theory. Slavery oppressed the white working class, which stayed in the South. And so, for instance, in 1860, a former Kentuckian ran for assembly in Illinois, and he said he remembered at age 19 having to rent himself out at $6 a month because slaves were being rented out at $75 a year. He had to undercut slave wages. And secession began to move when California came in as a free state, and it was the first time the South began to lose control of the federal government.
Okay, thanks for the call. Jennifer, a lot from Kay there. Take it where you want to run with it.
Well, thank you, Kay. You'll need to have her on again when this topic comes back in a week or two. There's something that she said that really connected with something that you said earlier, Rob. You said the Civil War in 2024, I mean memories of the Civil War in 2024. And this connects to Kay's talking about critical facts. Here's another thing that's going on in this conversation about the Civil War, is that there are people talking about having another Civil War if their candidate doesn't win. And in this case, it's almost invariably Donald Trump. So what critical facts are missing? You've got 30%, the electorate thinks that Biden did not win the 2020 election, 62% of Republicans, 42% of Republicans think that their vote, worried with that their vote would not count. So if you think your vote doesn't count, you don't believe in democracy. And then it's hard to know what it is you want instead. And so we have these, white right-wing groups very explicitly talking about a civil war, using the symbols of the Civil War as well. And so I just want to draw our attention to the fact that when we're talking about the Civil War, we're not talking about something historical. There's something also there's a threat here that I think is happening. It's not even the level of a dog whistle. I mean, humans can hear this. And so I think there's a kind of double duty that this talk is doing. And and it's in a way that I think is extremely, extremely dangerous. And as a historian, I cannot think of a historical analogy that's comparable, that where it was just rhetoric.
Okay, thanks for the call. We'll go to Martha now in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Yeah, hi. See, I wonder if your guest could address this typical conversation that I have with my Republican brothers and sisters when I point out the blatant, you know, in-your-face racism I see in that party these days. And, you know, their stock answer is, well, you know, the Republicans ended the Civil War and, you know, Lincoln was a Republican and blah, blah, blah. But I hope your guest can address the true, you know, people behind the processes of the Civil War breaking out were very right-wing conservatives of all stripes, not just Southern Democrats. Could she address that, please?
Martha, thanks for the call. That and how things may have realigned since then, Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard conversation to have. I'm sure it's an exhausting one to have, but it's so important that you're having it. And I think we need more people able and willing to have these sorts of conversations with family members, with friends, with neighbors, where they're literally living in two different worldviews. So one is, as Rob signals, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to sort of point them to history that there's a dramatic realignment in what the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. So I just think there would be innumerable examples of where you could show them a sort of shifting up. And I'd be curious, you know, what they would say, so that the term itself, Republican and Democrat, simply does not mean in 2024 what it meant, you know, in the 19th century. And then the other way you could address this would be to simply say, well, let's just lay out what did the Democrats at that time believe in? What was their party platform? What was, you know, what was the political rhetoric, the political commitments? And now let's compare it to the Republicans. And I think I would hope that very quickly your relatives would be able to see that what the Republicans of former days and today's Republicans, there's a yawning abyss between the two.
Thanks again for that call. Talking to Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen, professor of history at UW-Madison, about how we talk about the U.S. Civil War, some of the intellectual history behind that. Jennifer, I want to go back to the era before the Civil War now. We heard former President Trump talk about the idea of negotiation. And sometimes I think of the Civil War as breaking out, you know, after Lincoln is elected, by the time he's inaugurated. But we have this history, certainly 20 years, probably much longer, actually going back to the founding of this argument over slavery, its future in new states. Can you talk a little bit about the ideas that had been contesting well before 1860?
Ideas regarding?
The argument over slavery in the United States in the decades leading up to the Civil War.
I mean, it was the central issue in American life, North and South, East and West. And already instantiated in our own Constitution. I mean, this is the central driving issue of American history. So it's not kind of where does it crop up? It's where does it not crop up? So there's just no episode that you can look to between, let's say, 1776 and 1861, or even go earlier, 1859 with John Brown's raid, often seen as the initiating tick for the start of the Civil War. And the question of slavery, the expansion of slave states, who would be admitted into the Union, under what terms, this is just the key animating theme in American political economic history.
In our last couple of minutes, Jennifer, you're a professor, you work with students. What kind of things are you talking with them about these days, maybe even these last few years? We talk about our arguments over key moments in American history like the Civil War.
So there's a lot of things. One is that, you know, nowadays it's wonderful because students have right in their hands and in their back pockets access to all sorts of information that they could ever possibly want to know about the Civil War. But what they need then is the critical apparatus to make sense of what's coming at them, what's real, what's fake, what's legitimate, what's the product of real research. So on the one, it's tricky, right? Because in a way, I want to encourage and embolden all of my students to do their own inquiry. And with the use of their iPhone and the internet, they're able to do that. But it's also really teaching them, how do you navigate this barrage of information, frankly, this barrage of misinformation, and be able to put together something like a historically robust, real view of the past. That's one of the key things that I try to teach them.
And talk a little bit about the value of studying history to help us develop that literacy to examine what we encounter online, just in our last half a minute or so.
Well, you've come to my favorite subject, Rob, so thank you so much. Well, I would just say that historians, we try not to be what's called presentist. That is to say, when we look to the past, we try to understand that people in the past are living in a different time, they're different, living in a different age, they're living with a different worldview, and we try to not read them through our own standards or judge them against our own standards. So while we try not to be presentist, at the same time, we need that history to make sense of who we are now. And so the way that I think about history and the way I teach it to my students is that it's a way of coming at our long now, so that the questions that are facing us right now in 2024, at a very, very, very critical moment in our history, we're not marooned in the present without any kind of resources to figure out how to deal with this. We have a very rich and vibrant history. And then for me as an intellectual historian, it's populated by a number of thinkers and writers and artists and poets and social scientists who thought through these issues time and again.
Thanks to our guest, Jennifer Ratner-Rosenhagen, Distinguished Achievement Professor of History at UW-Madison. We've been talking about the way we talk about the Civil War and its impact on U.S. history.